Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Bonnie North. Empathy is the ability to understand and share in the feelings of others. Such sensitivity helps us bond with each other, and most humans have that capacity to a greater or lesser degree. An empath is someone who falls on the extreme end of the empathy bell curve. Such a person is usually extremely intuitive, open, and hypersensitive to others, often to their own detriment.
People who have this heightened awareness are often misdiagnosed as having anxiety or depression. But our next guest, Dr. Judith Orloff, says what some may see as anxiety could in fact be a case of being on that far end of the empathy spectrum.
Orloff is a psychiatrist and writer and empath based in Los Angeles. Her newest book is called The Empath Survival Guide. She joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski by phone and explains how an empath can improve their quality of life by balancing and prioritizing their own well-being.
It's a life changer once you learn how to do this, but until you do, it can be a little bit rough being an empath because empaths get overwhelmed, they go on sensory overload, they get autoimmune disorders, they feel tired a lot, and this is in part due to being an emotional sponge and taking everything on.
I imagine empaths have been called or mislabeled things during history. Do you have any examples of that?
Oh, God. It's so frequent. It's a travesty in traditional medicine that empaths go to a traditional doctor and they get labeled with all kinds of diagnoses. And they've been misdiagnosed as agoraphobia, panic disorder, major depression, malingerers, all kinds of things that they aren't. And so they're often given medications or antidepressants or anti-anxiety drugs to help them because they're so overwhelmed all the time from taking on stress from other people. But traditional medicine, as of yet, doesn't have the context with which to really treat and diagnose empaths. And that's why, you know, I feel so strongly. I treat empaths in my private practice in Los Angeles, and education is key. Education of family, education of loved ones, and even coworkers and bosses, what an empath is and how they're such an asset to every environment because of their deep insight, their amazing hearts, and they just give, often at the expense of their own well-being, which is not a good thing.
Right. And what has your personal experience been growing up?
Well, I was an empath child. I was an only child, and my parents were both physicians. I have 25 physicians in my family, so I came from a really scientific background, and here I was, a little girl who was very intuitive, but also I couldn't go into shopping malls and crowded places without feeling depressed, anxious, or changed in some way, in a negative way, when I was fine going in. And my mother used to tell me, oh, dear, you just don't have a thick enough skin, or you need to get tougher, you know, which made me feel like there was something wrong with me because I have a very sensitive nature, and I'm not hardened, and I'm not cut off, but I tend to feel things very intensely, as many empaths do. But as a child, I never had that support, so I grew up thinking there was something wrong with me, as many empaths do. And so I want to dispel that myth for everyone listening. Now, if you're an empath, and I have a self-assessment quiz at the beginning of the book that include questions like, have you been labeled as overly sensitive? Do you prefer taking your own car places so you can leave when you please and you don't get stuck in getting overwhelmed in social situations? Do you take on the anxiety and stress of other people? Do you get overwhelmed in crowds and you don't like loud noises or strong smells? So these are some of the questions that can identify you as an empath. So it's important, the revelation actually, to find out you are an empath. And then you could practice some of the strategies in the book to protect and center yourself so you have a healthy kind of empathy and you could become an empowered empath rather than a tired empath.
Why do you think it is that the world has grown to be, you know, rather disdainful of sensitivity, or American culture in particular? You know, often it's, you're being too sensitive is not a compliment.
No, it isn't. But it should be. I mean, not too sensitive, but, oh, you're so sensitive. How beautiful. you know, as opposed to, oh, you're too sensitive. Well, I think we live in an over-intellectualized culture where everybody's living in their heads most of the time, and they're not connected to their bodies or their intuition. And so, you know, we're taught to tough it out, you know, this macho version of, you know, what it is to be powerful and strong. And I think that's getting so outdated. You know, I have an empath called Dr. Orloff's Empath Support Community on Facebook with over 13,000 empaths, and they're mainly women. Except, you know, there are some men, but the men say they're so afraid to really express themselves because they've been called crybabies and sissies and, you know, bullied and mocked. And so it's a scar that they carry, you know, all that shaming over being sensitive. Boys have it worse than girls. So I always encourage men, and there's a section in the book on celebrating the sensitive man, to develop your sensitivities. I think there's a misconception that if men develop their sensitivities, they're going to be soft or overly feminized. And that's not what happens. What happens is you get a loving man with an open heart who's strong and grounded and amazing. So, you know, I think we have to let go of old stereotypes and really begin to embrace a new way of being sensitive man and a sensitive woman.
When you were developing your practice and going to more traditional medical training, when did you first discover that those paths were intersecting between being empathic and the traditional medicine you were learning? And I imagine you receive possibly some pushback from more traditional people in the medical field and professional field who perhaps did not see an intersection.
Yeah, I did, but most of the time I never brought it up because I was afraid of being ridiculed. And so when I went through my conventional medical training, I pretty much got into the science of it and the biology, and I worked in emergency rooms every third night. You know, and I did my residency at the Wadsworth VA Hospital and UCLA Hospital and County Hospital. So I had a really great traditional training, but there was no talk about empath. And I didn't really bring it up because I felt like, you know, I finally found a place that I belonged and I liked, and I didn't want to rock the boat. But when I opened up my practice, I had a patient come in who had major depression, and I put her on antidepressants. She got better. And then I had this dream or this empathic intuition that she was going to make a suicide attempt. And because there was nothing to point in that direction, I did not even bring it up with her. And within a couple of weeks, she overdosed on the antidepressants that I prescribed for her and ended up in a coma for 3 weeks. And, you know, that was my wake-up call, that I had to open up to some other things other than traditional science and begin to embrace my own empathy and intuition, you know, as a physician, that it was important because I felt like I didn't listen to it and I somehow harmed her. And that was intolerable to me. So that was my wake-up call that really started my exploration as a physician into what is an empath, what is intuition, why are they so important to our well-being, and how can I integrate it into my practice?
Well, the fact that you are trying to implement helpful tools in people's everyday lives, and I feel like in today's world, most of our day is spent in settings without much privacy, you know, between work and whatever setting we're in for that. So what are some tools to deal with, you know, possible feelings of being overwhelmed in a healthy way when we have so many responsibilities to juggle? You know, whether people may think they're empathic or not, I think it's we can both agree that some of these tools are good things for all of us to keep us grounded and to have more control and higher emotional IQ to help our quality of life.
Oh, definitely. Well put. Empaths need alone time. They can't just be overscheduled, go back to back, day in and day out without suffering sensory overload or some kind of physical fatigue. And so you need to schedule, you know, some alone time, maybe at the end of the day, whenever you can, to replenish yourself and decompress. Also, it's wonderful to jump into some water, you know, after a long day. You know, a bath, a shower, because water washes away all kinds of stress and negative energy. It's a primal element, and it can help you to relax and to wash away stress you might have picked up. And then also, it's important to learn how to set boundaries. That's one thing empaths are very reluctant to do, because they're afraid of being impolite, and they still want to help people all the time. They want people to be happy, but they often do this at the expense of asserting their needs. So they have to learn that no is a complete sentence. No, I'm not able to go out tonight because I'm too tired. Sorry to disappoint you. No, and it's empaths do not like to disappoint anyone. It's hard. But, you know, you have to make a choice sometimes. Is it your self-care? Or, you know, do you martyr yourself? And so setting boundaries. And there's a chapter in the book on different kinds of draining people that empaths need to set boundaries with. The chronic talker, for instance. If somebody corners you and nonstop talking, you know, and they don't even take a breath, what do? Do you just stand there until they're done? No. You have to interrupt. And that is very, very hard for empaths to do, but they have to learn how to do it. So these are some of the skills that I teach patients, and I use in my life all the time. I mean, I'm pretty good at setting boundaries. Otherwise, I'll get exhausted. You know, I'll get tired. I'll get drained. And I don't want to live that way. And so you want to have the endorphins going in your system, which are the feel-good neurochemicals. And the way to do that in terms of coping strategies are through meditation, exercise, laughter, being around positive people, being in nature, which empaths love. So, you know, there's a certain formula here, and it's a fun formula because empaths love to do all the things I'm suggesting. You know, it brings relief, plus, you know, to get out in nature and take a break and, you know, take a walk and be by a tree or be with your animal friends. I mean, that's a joy for empaths.
I imagine people may be listening to this and recognizing things that resonate with them. And I want to get into a quote from your book. You have, we are in the midst of an evolution of human consciousness, and empaths are the path forgers. So how are we in this evolution of human consciousness today that has not been seen previously?
Well, our world is in a crisis now. And part of the lessons of dealing with our world are dealing with narcissists and the world stage. There are a million of them. They're all over the place. Narcissists are people who are into power and glory and power and prestige. And the full-blown narcissist has what's called empathy deficient disorder, which means they don't really have empathy as we know it. So they don't respond in the same way that you would expect other people to respond. It's hard to grasp, but it's really true. And so the opposite of that is the empath. So narcissists have no empathy, and empaths are supercharged with empathy. And because empathy allows you to get in somebody else's shoes to feel what they're feeling, it is the best hope we have in bridging difficult communication. Because without empathy, you're going to have the continuation of what we have now, you know, which isn't very good, in my opinion. But if you have empaths, let's say on the world stage or as parents or as teachers, and you can feel what's going on in someone else and begin to ask them about their perspective and their feelings, that's a sign of deep respect. And it's a way to bring people together, to create a deeper understanding. I want people to understand me. I don't want people to judge me, you know, or exclude me from things because of certain labels that they put on me. I don't want any of that. And empathy goes beyond that because it comes from the heart. You know, it's looking at you. It says if someone is looking at you from their heart instead of some kind of judgmental persona, you know, where they can accept you even if they don't agree with you. Empaths can feel into who you are, what's important to you, and once you know that, then you can begin to come together. So that's why empathy is part of this revolution. And sensitive people are on the forefront of this. That's why I felt so passionate about writing this book. And I go around and teach about empathy to have the importance of empathy recognized.
Well, Dr. Judith Orloff, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to speak with us about empathy today.
You're very welcome.
UCLA psychiatrist Dr. Judith Orloff is the author of The Empath's Survival Guide, Life Strategies for Sensitive People. She spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski, and you can find out more at WUWM.com.